It's time for Taylor Talk, the number one Taylor Swift podcast brought to you by the fan site, taylorswift13.org.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to the special interview that accompanies our release of Epic Episode 4 of Taylor Talk. We have a special guest coming on to chat with us today, and we're so honored to have him here recording with us. Jensita, why don't you introduce him?
I'm totally fangirling right now.
Me too.
Okay, the moment is here that you've all been waiting for. Drum roll, please. We've had some clues as to, let's recap. We've said that it's someone who knows about more about the Speak Now tour than we all do, and you all do. And we have said that it is a male. What we haven't told you is that it was actually one of the openers of Taylor Swift's tour, and he is Charlie Worship.
Yeah. All right. Hey, you guys.
Hey, Charlie. Welcome to the show.
Thanks. I'm glad to be here.
So we were thinking if you could first just, you know, give us a little introduction about yourself, because you weren't necessarily on the entire tour. So some people may not know who you are quite yet. So if you could just tell us about yourself and which shows you were at.
Definitely. Well, my first show opening for Taylor was in Nashville on September 16th and 17th. And that's where I live. I've lived there the last 5 years. I'm originally from Mississippi. But I was on the tour from Nashville through the Dallas Cowboys show on October 8th. I got to go to, we went from Nashville to Bossier City, Tulsa, Kansas City, Denver and Salt Lake and Little Rock and New Orleans. And I think that's all the cities. I hope I'm not leaving anyone out. They went by in such a blur, even though it was, you know, a little more than 3 weeks. It felt like it was over before I knew it, you know. But it was a lot of fun, and I'm back in Nashville these days, so.
So you mentioned Cowboys as one of those, the Cowboys Stadium.
That's right.
Was that like the most mind-numbing experience? Because that place is huge.
It was pretty insane. We were lucky to get to do two different stadium shows. The first was the Arrowhead Stadium in Kansas City, which was really magical in its own because it was outdoors. And it was the first time that myself or the folks in my band had really played for that many people. But then going to Dallas Cowboys Stadium, it's just so massive. I mean, even in stadium terms, it's just so massive. And I think Taylor sold it out, or if not, it was very close to sell out. And it's, of course, a new stadium and super awesome fans that were extremely loud, you know. So it was quite the experience, to say the least, yeah.
So how did you get involved with getting to go on this tour?
Well, I've been working, I mean, obviously I've been playing music all my life, but the last couple of years I've been working on a solo career. And the person that I work with at my publishing company, Arthur Buenahora, he helped Taylor get her first publishing deal. And before the tour started, there was word sort of up and down Music Row. Taylor's management let out a notice that they were looking for acts to open. And she had this really nice message about how when she was coming up through the ranks, a lot of established country artists gave her a shot and let her open for them, you know, maybe before she really had anything on radio. And, you know, I mean, because obviously, you know, people had done favors to help her and she wanted to return that favor. So they were wanted people to submit acts who were just getting started and could really use the exposure. And because I still don't have a record deal and am still working on that, but, you know, of course, at the time, not having a record deal, that put me at a disadvantage. But my publisher, who had helped her, was able to get my music to her and her team, and we were fortunate enough to be one of the acts selected.
We were fortunate enough to have you.
Oh, are you kidding? Oh, I had the time of my life.
So what was your reaction then when you found out, when they finally confirmed and they're like, yeah, you're going to be opening for Taylor Swift?
You know, that's the craziest thing about it is there was sort of a series of reactions because, of course, you know, at first we've heard that she was doing that. And of course, I got excited. I'm thinking, man, this could be incredible. But you don't want to hope for it because you don't know if it's going to happen. And then we would hear one thing or another, and we'd be a little closer to knowing, you know, and I think we might have a shot, you know. But when it came down to the moment that I found out for sure, I was actually at Lowe's with my dad. He was visiting in Nashville. My folks are in town, and I literally just went to check my phone, and I saw that I had an email, and it was from my manager, and it was forwarded from Taylor's management, basically saying, congratulations, you've been chosen. So I kind of had a freak out episode in the middle of Lowe's.
Did she ever like call you and talk to you about the tour?
What's no, she didn't. We just got that email. You know, Jensita, when I met you in Omaha, the way she sort of introduced herself to everyone, she was kind enough to invite the openers all to her opening night in Omaha.
That's awesome.
Yeah, and the cool thing about that was we got to see backstage and how how the tour works, you know, from behind the scenes before ever going out on the tour. So it gave me a lot of insight and a chance to prepare and bring a better show to the tour, you know, by the time I got on the tour. And of course, she was incredibly gracious and said hey to all of us that were there. They even provided a bus ride for us from Nashville to Omaha, and it was a great show. And as if I wasn't already fired up, seeing the show in Omaha definitely got me even that more excited to get out there and join the tour.
Yay.
Yeah, it's been a while. I'm still processing the whole experience, to be honest with you guys.
So what was your favorite memory then from the tour?
Oh, there
besides
was...
Besides meeting me?
Besides meeting Jensita. Meeting Jensita, I gotta tell you, I wasn't even officially an opener at that point, and that blew everything out of the water. But there were so many great moments. I'm trying to think of... I mean... It may be an obvious one, but the moment I think I was most proud of and that really just captured my heart was on our last show in Dallas. The crew, I'd been singing the cover song "I Want Candy" at every show, and I was videotaping the crowds to put in a YouTube video that I put out last month. But at the last show, the crew hid in the pit. And when we sang "I Want Candy," they had these giant boxes of candy, and they had passed it out to the people around them, and everybody started throwing candy up on stage, and so we got pranked. When the tour was over, I didn't know this at first, but I've come to find out we were the only opening act that got pranked on the tour. And
yeah.
So, I mean, you know, I mean, not that I'm bragging, but, you know, we made so many good friends on the tour that it was just a really great feeling to know that, you know, as much as we admired the people we got to know on the tour, that they admired us back. And it was just a really, like, I'll never forget that, you know, because you always hear about country artists, you know, pranking each other. I think that's a big part of, and to have my first prank be on the first tour I was ever on, for that to be Taylor Swift, you know, really put it over the top.
So Taylor will always hold a special place in your heart?
Oh, definitely. And I got to talk to her before that show and thank her, you know, for having me on the tour. And that's exactly, I mean, the thing I wanted her to carry away from me being on the tour was that, you know, no matter what happens in my career success-wise, I will always, you know, she will always be the one who gave me a start, you know, and gave me a chance to get out in front of fans and try my music out and try entertaining out, you know, on that kind of scale. So... because, you know, being on a tour like that and not having a record deal yet, it's one thing to play for the crowds, you know, but just this whole year has been a fantastic year for me because I've had that feather in my cap, and that's all thanks to Taylor. And she knows that. That's why she did what she did for all the openers, you know, and I think if you talk to any of the other openers, I think they would say the same thing. And so, you know, for her to take care of some up-and-coming acts like that says a lot about the kind of person she is.
Yeah, you don't hear about people without record deals usually going on tour with people too often.
You really don't, you know, and that's all thanks to her.
I think you'll get a record deal soon now.
Oh, well, I've got my fingers crossed. We've had, you know, I don't know. We'll see. We'll see what happens. I've got my fingers crossed.
Not having a record deal and not having people really be familiar with your music, what was it like actually performing your own personal songs in front of these huge crowds?
Oh, it was very much like I've never skydived, but I would imagine it's similar because, you know, I knew that going in and from seeing the show in Omaha, everyone is there to see Taylor. They're there to sing her songs. I come to find out how gracious the crowds were and how open they were to hearing new music and giving it a shot. But of course, until I played that first show, I didn't know what that would be like. And I was just under the assumption that if I had bought a ticket to see Taylor, anything in the way of me and seeing Taylor, I would not like. You know, it would just be a distraction or whatever. But the crowds were great. And, you know, nobody really did know my music except for a few people. And of course, to see that, to see a handful of people that would actually know the words was just unbelievable. And a lot of those people learned my music before the show because of course, you know, Taylor supported her opening acts. But it was very nerve-wracking until the first show, and then once I realized how welcoming the crowds were, it quickly became the most fun I've ever had.
It's interesting to hear your side of the story, because, you know, I look at it from a fan point and I see the opening acts up there and, you know, you introduce the band like, oh, this is my drummer. You know, some people have a little bit bigger of a band. This is my, you know, Need to Breathe says, like, this is my brother, Bo. Like, everyone cheer for them. And I kind of get, like, feel like sometimes I'm the only one screaming out there because I want to be supportive of them. But do you ever feel like kind of bad, like, oh, the whole crowd's not really into it? Are you just grateful, you know, just to be up there?
Well, you know, maybe it's because I had never experienced crowds that size before, but those crowds are so large that even if a third of them were to holler, it's really loud. It was louder than any crowd I'd ever played for. So for me, it was all a win, you know. And I, of course, like my attitude going in, though, was that my job was to be a cheerleader, you know, just like you would be the marching band at halftime. I mean, the real show is the Taylor show, like just like the football game is the football game. And it's my job just to help everyone have fun. So I really never was disappointed, you know, but I didn't expect people to know all my songs or to scream as loud for me as they did for Taylor. I thought if I could find people dancing or smiling, you know, even a handful, that would be a win. And of course, the way the lights are too, you know, you really can't see past the first 50 rows or so. So it was just this dark void that was really loud and cheery, and you know, you saw all the sparkling moving lights, you know, which was very cool too. So yeah, it was more exhilarating than anything. I can't think of a time that I was, you know, disappointed at all.
Based on what I've witnessed, it seems like Taylor's fans are a lot more receptive to opening acts.
I think so, you know, and I think, you know, if you go back and you follow Taylor's career when she first started out, you know, right now in country there's sort of two worlds. There's the, I call it the lifestyle music that's more you know, about a singer getting on stage and say, well, you know, this is the kind of life I have and it's country and it's these things. And then you have the ones who are more like the classic artists of the 60s, and I mean, like her last guest on the tour, James Taylor, you know, who shares these stories that don't really attach themselves to a specific time or place. They're just human emotions and situations that we go through. And I think when you're that kind of artist, I think when you tell stories about emotions and about relationships and life struggles and triumphs, that people automatically, in order to even get it, they have to have a bigger antenna. You know, they have to be more of a voracious music seeker and new artist seeker, and therefore just her fans from day one, I think, have been really intelligent music fans that are always on the lookout for more music. And I think that they know going to a Taylor show that they can trust, you know, Taylor's taking care of that show from the minute they walk in the door till the minute they leave, you know. And so I think they expect me and all the other openers, I think they expected us to bring them, you know, a good time and cheer them up and get them pumped up before her show, but also to impart a little bit of our who we are, you know, and our stories. And I actually would play the show, the set list, to do just that. We always wanted to start the show and end the show with songs that were getting people out of their seats and feeling good. And, of course, we did a cover every show. But right in the middle, I would always do one song, at least one song that was really personal to me, because I just think that's what Taylor's fans gravitate towards.
Mm-hmm.
That makes total sense. Yeah.
So how was it different being on tour with Taylor than any other artist you might have been on tour with?
Oh, man. There were so many differences and so many similarities. The one major artist I was really fortunate to open for other than Taylor this past year was Miranda Lambert. We did five shows opening for her. in a weird way, as different as those shows were, there were maybe more similarities than differences. For example, backstage on both tours, everyone was extremely friendly, from the crew to the band, right up to the star herself. You know, Miranda was very welcoming, the same way that Taylor was and her people were. And then the fans were extremely dedicated. I think the Miranda fans have followed Miranda along a different path, you know? Mm-hmm. And it's sort of like the same person in a different outfit. You know, I think that really great people are going to rise to the top. I think that Taylor and Miranda are both examples of that. And they wouldn't be where they were if they didn't treat people well. And so the differences, I can't really say the differences other than, you know, just I got to be friends with a lot of the people in both of their bands. And musically, you know, their styles are quite different. But other than that, you know, I think everybody that's out there on the road is doing it because they love it and they're having the time of their life, but they also take it very seriously and they're very dedicated to their craft, you know.
Do the crowds respond to you differently? Like, did you notice a difference in, you know, the Miranda crowd to the Taylor crowd and their response to your music?
They both... It was a little different because we played with a full electric setup on the Miranda crowd on those shows. And so I think it was a little rowdier in the sense of it was just the way it would be later in the night and with more noise, you know. And I think Miranda they both had a great turnout of young. I think they're both really good role models, and they had both had really young crowds that were excited to be there. But I think Miranda maybe had a little bit more of an older crowd, you know, and of course the venues were different too. I mean, there were a lot of hockey arenas on the Miranda tour, and it felt a little more like you were in a room with people. Whereas on the Taylor tour, that stage is so huge and her production is so extraordinary. I mean, I can't think of anybody who puts that much into their show, you know, into putting on a great show. And so it felt a little bit more like, you know, like for example, on the Miranda shows, one thing I learned, and I learned this from watching Taylor, when you're talking to a big crowd, you have to go, "Hey," and let it land. My name is, you know, like, so with the Miranda crowd, it felt a little more intimate. I think the crowds were just, they were a little bit smaller venues. They were still very large, but I could sort of talk faster, you know? Okay. And then with the Taylor crowd, I felt like, I was singing down a cave sometimes, you know. I'd have to make sure that all my words landed before I kept going. But they were both, I mean, I can't say enough good things about either of those experiences.
So something I'm curious about, and my co-hosts don't seem to care. Only I care.
I care. I was
curious. What is it like? What are the traveling arrangements like? Like, do you get one of Taylor's buses? Because she said on 60 Minutes, you know, she owns a fleet of buses.
Right, she does. She has her own bus fleet and a bus depot. Which is where we would meet before going on the runs. And she was kind enough. We were on the bus with some of the folks that were out there with CoverGirl. And so we were able to have, travel accommodations. Buses are extremely expensive to run, as I'm sure you guys, you know, already know. And so for them to take care of us that way was pretty awesome. And the bus family was really nice. And usually, you know, after the show, a lot of the band and crew and the dancers would hang out in the lot around the buses and catch up, which is, you know, that's a big part of how we got to become friends with the folks on her tour, you know, was the bus life, so to speak.
That's pretty cool. I want to go on one of Taylor's buses.
Oh, they're really awesome. I love sleeping on the buses. The bunks are cold and dark, and you're kind of getting rocked to sleep all night long, you know, because of the road. And, there's always food, which is great. I love eating food late at night. And
what kind of food?
You know, that was mind blowing to me. There was catering always in the backstage area. So you'd have catering, you know, breakfast, lunch, and dinner catering. It was great catering. They would have like a little in the morning there'd be a guy cooking omelets for you to order, and at night that same place they would do like pasta to order, and then of course you could get like your choice of anything else, just this massive buffet.
They actually had chefs backstage for you.
Oh, yeah. They would always, the kitchen was full of folks, you know, taking care of you. And then you would get to your dressing room, and we were able to do a rider. You know, you hear about, like, Van Halen getting the bucket of M&Ms and no brown M&Ms, you know, like we got to do that, you know, not, we didn't really, we just wanted chips and hummus really and salsa. That was all we asked for. But,
speaking of brown M&Ms, like we were just wondering who the wildest, craziest, funniest person was on tour.
Oh gosh. Well, about half of the shows, we got to share a dressing room with Need to Breathe. And Bo from Need to Breathe is quite the wild man. Not like bad wild. Like, they're some of the funnest folks I've ever hung out with in my life. They love music to begin with. Everything is, you know, they're always talking about gear or about bands or whatever. But after the shows, you know, sometimes we would hang out and we'd get to share a dressing room with them and hang out with them. And we just had wild. They took one of my 8x10 pictures and drew all over it and funny stuff, you know. And like a couple times, I got a handful of peanuts thrown at my face, which was great.
Was it like, were they like hazing like the new guy on tour?
You know, I mean, I guess you could say it was, but it was. I think it was just the way that they cut loose, you know, because it definitely was what they would have done whether we were there or not. You know, they just are fun folks, you know. And the thing about Need to Breathe that I really respect and got to know about them is they really are a family. They've been, of course, the couple of the guys are brothers, but Seth, the bass player, has been best friends with Bo since they were 8, I think. And they've been working together in bands since they were in high school, you know. And it just shows, and they have the kind of fun that you would have growing up with your brother or your best friend that lives next door, you know, just mischief, good old-fashioned, nobody's getting hurt mischief. And that was fun. And we got to go hang, you know, with some of Taylor's band, and those guys are all great. We had a lot of fun, and we got to go to great cities. You know, that was part of it too, was that I think the places, the particular cities where we visited, there was just so much cool stuff to do that you couldn't help but have awesome, crazy fun with whoever you were with, you know.
So when you're saying we, were you had a band of your own there as well?
I did. Two of my good friends, Rachel Loy and Adam Popick, who I've known pretty much since college and live in Nashville, and they play, you know, they're both session musicians and play on the road. Adam's playing with Easton Corbin right now, and Rachel plays on a ton of sessions. We pretty much were together 24/7, you know, whether it was on the bus or at the venue. And the three of us stuck together quite a bit just because we were buddies before the tour. And, you know, I think that makes a big difference too. I mean, like, for example, I brought a couple of Tupperware bins full of like lava lamps and Christmas lights kind of stuff, you know, and we would always make our dressing room a vibe room and keep the door open, you know, and so folks would come in for a minute and hang with us. And I think that made a big difference, you know, because you get to be out there and it's one locker room to the next, you know, and if you don't make a point, you know, to break out of the mundane nature of that, then you can get pretty bored or pretty down really quickly, because there's only so many cinder blocks you can stand, you know. and of course, you know, I mean, the Need to Breathe folks had vibe stuff, and that's something that we kind of picked up from them, really, you know, to make sure our dressing room felt good to walk into. And
it sounds fun.
It's a lot of fun. I felt like it's kind of like maybe what being a pirate was or something, you know, like those things you want to be when you're 3 years old, you know. That's kind of, it's kind of like that. You have to pinch yourself every now and then, you know. There's ice cream all day long, like three doors down.
Oh, don't say that.
Oh no, really, the catering, they had fresh baked cookies, right? Cookies and ice cream all day in catering, you know.
That's
like,
that makes you omelets. That's heaven right there.
Oh my gosh! If any of Taylor's people are listening, I want to come on the next tour, please.
Yeah, I
don't sing, I don't play any instruments, but I can be there for moral support.
Exactly. Well, and you know, there's so many people on the tour, and they're all really healthy. That's what blows my mind. If I stayed on that tour the whole tour, I would weigh twice what I weigh right now. Because there's food on the bus too. That was the other thing. You would get on the bus at like 1 a.m. and then they would have picked up Jimmy John's or some local pizza place or something, you know, just in case you didn't get a chance to eat 50 times already today. Anyway, good stuff.
They want to make sure you're well nourished, so that way when you get on stage, you have plenty of energy.
Oh yeah, I definitely had all the energy I needed.
Did they keep like a large supply of like energy drinks and coffee and...
Oh, yeah. Oh, definitely. One of our favorite things to do, though, was Adam, who played percussion with me, he and I would take off in each of the cities and find whatever the coolest local coffee shop was. And I think that's something, as long as I have the chance to do it on the road, I will do that. Because you run into the coolest locals and, like, really just awesome surprises. You know, every city has its secrets, like secret spots that all the locals love, and if you take time to talk to folks, you know, while you're out and about in the morning or whatever, they'll always point you to the place that isn't on the tourist map, you know.
How much free time did you actually have on tour, though?
You know, it was a weird schedule, and I'm actually still kind of on the schedule. I've had a hard time getting up before 1 p.m. since the tour. In a way, it's what you make it, but usually the quote-unquote work part of the day for us would start around 1. Before that, I would try to go to the gym or go for a run or go walk around the city or something, you know. But we would the buses would usually pull up to the venue around 10 in the morning. Anytime from like 7 in the morning till 11 in the morning, you would arrive. And usually we would sleep through that part of the day. And then we would start, you know, get in the dressing room, load up the dressing room and our gear and stuff around 1 or 2 in the afternoon. And because I'm sort of just starting out, I don't have a large team with me. So I was doing a lot of the, like, coordinating the meet and greet stuff and everything. So we would start working on that around 1 or 2 in the afternoon and then go to sound check. Of course, we're playing around 7. And then we would go watch the show every night after we got done. And after the show was done, we would load the buses, like, anytime from 11 till midnight. And then you've got free time till anywhere from midnight till 3 or 4 in the morning, depending on when the buses leave. And nobody wants to go to sleep, you know, even though you probably should. It's like, if you're sitting there in the parking lot and all your new friends that are on tour with you are hanging outside, you're going to go hang outside with them, you know. So the typical day was, I'd say, 11 a.m. till 3 in the morning, something like that.
Sounds like my kind of day.
Yeah. Yeah. If I could just stay on that schedule, I would be very happy.
If you weren't a musician, what would you want to be doing?
I've been asked this question a couple times, and I still can't figure out a great answer. I will say things that I would probably enjoy doing. I would love to work at Lego. I'd love to build Legos for a living, like design Legos.
That's awesome.
Have you been to Legoland?
I have not. I've got to make it to Legoland. I'm going to ask for that for Christmas. gosh, you know, I mean, I was kind of a nerd growing up in high school, and I was really into math. I was in mock trial.
I love mock trial. I was in that too.
Yeah. You know, the thing about it for me, because I think that music is kind of this. I think when you get to sort of, I mean, you're not really fighting in music, but you're standing up for something that you believe in. And that's what I think it would be cool to be, sort of a television type lawyer that does those cases that, you know, at the end everybody's cheering and you help the little man from the big man or whatever, you know.
Judge Judy.
Yeah. Well, maybe, you know, maybe Perry Mason or some, yeah, like, yeah. Matthew McConaughey in a John Grisham movie, you know, that kind of thing. But gosh, you know, I can't really imagine doing anything other than music. The funny thing is and I've heard people say, you know, if you have a plan B, then you shouldn't be doing music because you have to be that devoted to it. But if I did, my realistic plan B is to find another way to play music. You know, if I couldn't be an artist, I would want to be a songwriter. And if I couldn't be a songwriter, I would want to play in sessions, you know. But ideally, I'd love to get to do all of that. And, you know, hopefully I'll always be fortunate enough to get to do at least one of those, you know. And if, you know, heaven forbid I couldn't do music, I think I'd have to work at Legoland.
That's awesome.
That's the coolest awesome thing. I never would have come up with anything that creative.
Definitely using that to promote the show.
Oh, you know what? I'll tell you what else I could do. I could be like an Anthony Bourdain. I could be a chef / television host that travels around the world. I can't have a real job. I got to have something fun to do.
Ooh, ladies, take note.
If you enjoy what you do, you never have to work a day in your life.
Yeah, I really believe that's important. I mean, obviously, you're still working hard. You know, I mean, the hardest, I've worked really hard doing music, as odd as that sounds, you know, but I can't imagine doing something I didn't love. And I hope that everybody who hears this and anyone who hears that from anybody else really takes note. You know, it's definitely not an excuse for, you know, just going and doing something fun or being lazy. You still have to work, but loving it is critical.
Yes, happiness is key.
And I think we're all pretty fortunate, those of us who get to do something that's, even if it's not our favorite hobby, at least something we can handle, because so many people have jobs they hate. So,
yeah, life's too short, you know, and I think it makes you live longer if you do something you love. And I think you contribute more to the greater good if you're doing something you love.
Greater good? Harry Potter pun?
Probably. That's probably where I picked it up from. I didn't realize that going past. Y'all are going to expose what a nerd I am.
No. Don't even worry about it. I love Harry Potter so much. Charlie, I've gone to Harry Potter conventions. I go every summer.
Awesome.
So,
where are they? Are they in Vegas? Or are they?
No, they're all over. The last couple summers have been in Orlando because we've gone to the Wizarding World of Harry Potter. You know, they've got the amusement park there.
You should pick up Charlie and go to Legoland on the way.
I know. Well, next summer's in Chicago.
Okay, so if you could be any Harry Potter character, who would you be?
If I could be any Harry Potter character, who would it be? It's hard to say because some of my favorite characters died, so I don't want to be them.
Okay. Fair enough.
I want to be Luna Lovegood.
Yeah, I would not be Luna Lovegood either. She's kind of loony. I'd have to go with Ron. I would be Ron.
I think that's a wise choice. Ron is a likable guy.
Ron is one of the coolest characters.
So, Belle, you would be Luna Lovegood. Jensita, who would you be?
I've never seen a single movie.
She's the non-Harry Potter fan.
All right. Wow.
I still love you, though.
Oh, thank you. And I feel that and return it.
Who would you be if you could be any character?
It might be fun to be Hagrid because he gets to drink a lot. I'm joking. I'm totally joking. No, Hagrid's just a cool guy.
Hagrid's like 10 feet. He's like 10 feet tall. He can hold his liquor pretty well. So
yeah, no, I totally do not mean that.
And he gets to play with animals and dragons and stuff.
Yeah, you know, and he's got a lot of buddies out in the woods. Like, he would never be on the losing end of a fight if he got in trouble. He could call on some friends, you know.
He wouldn't have to call friends. He's Hagrid.
Right. That's true. Yeah. He wouldn't. People love Hagrid. Who doesn't like Hagrid?
Yeah, everyone loves Hagrid. I mean, that moment in the seventh book where Hagrid hits the ground on the motorcycle, and then the title of the next chapter is The Fallen Warrior.
This somehow turned into a Harry Potter cast.
You gotta expand your base, you know?
Reach out into the Potter community. There's a big community there. We can grow.
I don't even know. I forget how we got into it. Did it have something to do with Legoland? Because I think...
No, it was because you said something about for the greater good.
I got you. Wow. Okay, tangent. I love it. I'm big on tangents.
So, since we just called you out on being a Harry Potter fan and a nerd, what is your favorite, most embarrassing moment ever?
Oh, wow. Not just on a tour, right?
It could be on the tour, one on the tour, and then one throughout maybe your lifetime.
Okay. One thing I did it wasn't on the Taylor tour, it was on the Miranda tour. You know, when you're walking out on stage, that's like your biggest chance to look cool and to try to convince everybody you're cool. And on one of the Miranda shows, I walked out and Adam was playing the kick drum, and he had the kick drum going. We were getting everybody pumped up, and I run out to the front of the runway and I start playing, and there's no sound coming out. And I look down and I'd forgotten to plug my wireless pack into my guitar. And so in front of everybody there, you know, I have to grab my cord and look at everybody sheepishly and grin and plug it in and then start, which is kind of embarrassing, but kind of funny now that it's passed. And then most embarrassing thing ever. Oh, man, there's so many that I don't know if I can think of.
Come on, make us laugh.
Oh, gosh. There's some that I just can't even talk about publicly. They're so embarrassing. Oh, let's see. Let's see. I'm trying to think. What's really embarrassing?
I'll tell you one of my stories.
Okay, and that'll give me time to think.
To think about one?
Okay.
So my story, I'll try and keep it brief because we're not here to listen to me. We're here to listen to you. But when I was in high school, I was in student council, and we put on this big conference and had like 1,500 people there. And because we, as the hosts of this conference, had to get around the campus fast, we used Razor scooters to get around. And so, well, they did two split lunches, so there were about 700 in one lunch, 700 in another. And here I am, I'm busting on this Razor scooter across my high school, and there was a set of about four stairs. And I'm like, oh, I can totally clear that. I've got enough speed. So I'm going. I jump in front of like 700 people from high schools around the city, and I land. And then all of a sudden, I'm like, I landed it, yes. But then the Razor scooter completely slipped out from under me, and I was flat on my back in front of like 700 people. And all I did was I got up and I'm like, yeah, that was fun. Let's do it again. And then I went and hid and started like crying.
They're worse things. They're worse things. You know that the best I think I can come up with, I don't know if it would be embarrassing. I think it is. But I actually won the Womanless Beauty pageant in my high school. It was a fundraiser for our geometry group. And I took first place. I was Charlene Darlin was my alter ego.
That a boy.
That was.
Well, congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you. The ribbon is still hanging on my bedroom wall and that I grew up in.
Oh my goodness.
Oh man.
Oh my goodness. I love that. So, do you have any celeb crushes?
Oh, celebrity crushes. Always, yes. Oh man,
right?
I'm trying to think. There's just so many. I admire a lot of celebrities. Actually, Emma Watson.
Yes. Thank you.
She just impresses me so much. Like her going to college in America. Was it Brown University?
Yeah, she went to Brown.
I think that's really cool. And the way that she handles being famous and doesn't make a big deal out of it, the way that she expands her acting career into fashion and other things, I think is brilliant. I've always had a crush on Jennifer Aniston. I know she's before my time.
I love her.
But I think she's a classic American beauty.
Let's hope she's not listening in and hear you say she's before your time.
Oh, no, she's still... beauty is all ages, and she's not. I'm not saying she's old, you know. She would probably.
I don't think Jennifer
it'd be
Aniston
creepy if she and I dated.
Listens to our podcast.
But man, Emma Stone, who stars in The Help, I think she's a great actress.
She might be listening to the podcast. Her and Taylor are friends.
Get out of here!
You didn't know that?
Friend,
oh,
friend.
I did not know that.
She was just at the last concert.
Oh wow. Okay.
Yeah, she was there.
I know. You're like bummed out now. You didn't get her number from Taylor.
Oh, no, right? Man.
You got to call up Taylor now and be like, Taylor, I need Emma's number, please.
Oh, no. She's got better things to worry about. I would hate to be that guy asking Taylor for someone else's number. That would put her in such an awkward spot, you know?
Maybe she could like tweet a picture of you guys. Do you have any pictures?
You know, we don't. Me and Taylor?
You went on tour with Taylor for 3 weeks and never took one picture with her.
I didn't, but and here's the reason why. She does 4 or 5 meet and greets every show, and she works so hard. And at that time, she was launching Wonderstruck, and she was also putting together the DVD package that just came out. Mm-hmm. That's just so much on a person, and... like I can't imagine how long her days are and how packed they are, and the few times that I saw her, I just didn't want to be
fanboy.
Yeah, you know, not that she doesn't enjoy taking pictures. I know that she loves that, but I guess it was sort of an unspoken trust that there would be the chance for that down the road, you know. And just out of respect for her, I didn't want to ask her for anything because I felt like I'd already received so much from her, you know. I may regret later that I didn't get a picture with her, but for now I'm just I was just so blown away by getting the opportunity in the first place, you know, that I, to be honest, it didn't even really cross my mind to try to get a picture with her just because it was, there was so much to take in, and she was so busy. I can't tell you how busy she was. I couldn't handle just running the tour, much less everything else she had going on. I mean, our first show with her, 60 Minutes, was there filming the special that just came out, you know, and she goes and does promotions with the local radio stations and all the CoverGirl stuff. And I know this wasn't a question, but like, if you were to ask me what I admire about Taylor, that is what I admire about Taylor, is that she just doesn't stop. You know, she gives so much to the point that I really don't know how it's physically possible.
And that she's involved in every single detail.
And there are some great shows out there in country music, but to have dancers and aerialists and fireworks and walking through the whole crowd and getting on a balcony and flying around the room and costume changes on top of everything else that happens that day, you know, the meet and greets. And one of my favorite things to do was to walk out before the doors open, but after the gates open, and to see everything going on outside the venues, because it's like a fair. It's like going to your, you know, like the whole day is an event. And that's so inspiring, you know, that her music touches people so deeply, and also that it creates such a positive experience that lasts. It's not just a 2-hour concert, you know. It's really, really impressive.
Well, I have faith that you will meet again and you'll get your picture.
Oh, we'll get a picture. We'll get a picture. It'll be worth the wait.
Something to look forward to.
Definitely.
So what is your guilty pleasure music? What's on your iPod that you would be embarrassed by?
Ooh, I've got to look right now and tell you, because there's definitely some of that going on. I don't necessarily think it's a guilty pleasure. While I'm pulling it up, I will say I'm a big Katy Perry fan.
Okay, yeah, we love her.
I think she's great.
She's a good friend of Taylor's, too.
Yeah, I got to see Katy this summer as one of the few concerts I got a chance to go see, and I thought it was a great show. I'm looking through here. Oh, man, guilty pleasures. I listen to a lot of bands that I don't think anybody knows.
So who, in that case, let's reword it. Who is it you rock out to in your car, and then when somebody rolls up next to you, you have to, like, roll your window up so they don't hear what you're listening to?
Oh, you know what? Maybe that's what it is. I am shameless. If I'm rocking out to anything, I am rocking out, and I don't care if the world sees it.
I tend to roll the windows up in my car when I have Aqua's Barbie Girl blasting, though.
I got you. Man... You know, I can't think of anything I listen to that I wouldn't want to tell people about, you know? And I don't mean to have a lame answer for the question, but looking through, you know, oh, how is Spice Girls, If You Want to Be My Lover, boom, I just found it.
Yes.
That is a great song, and I love that song. Just that one song, but that would have to be my guilty pleasure.
Spice Girls was actually the first concert I went to as a child.
Oh, Adam, I'm sorry, Adam. Actually, I'm not sorry. That was probably a great first concert.
They were definitely my childhood crushes. Those girls were very attractive.
Yeah, I was going to say.
I mean, one's a supermodel, so.
Right.
Speaking of rocking out in your car, do you have any other hidden talents?
Other hidden talents. I do like to cook. I'll say I'm a pretty good cook. I can build things. I'm kind of a carpenter type. Do what?
Like Legos.
Yeah, like Legos. Anything with nails and 2x4s, I'm pretty decent with. I'm not a Mr. Fix-It, though. Like, I don't really... I can't fix cars. I'm automotively challenged, if that's a word, automotively.
We make up plenty of words every day.
I know, you fit in well.
I had one more question for you. Was there any guest performers when you were on tour?
There were. There were a lot in Nashville. Kenny Chesney, Tim McGraw, Haley Williams from Paramore came out, sang, which was ridiculously cool. She is a rock star. I know she literally is a rock star, but she is a rock star. She took control of that stage. She had a fanny pack on, and she was rocking it. I thought that was so cool.
Yeah, I feel that. Did you get to meet those people? Did you get to meet them?
Guest artist, I saw B.O.B.'s limo in Dallas. I didn't meet B.O.B. In Nashville, after the show, I walked backstage and I passed a crowd of country stars. Like Faith Hill was there with Tim McGraw, even though she didn't get out and sing, you know. And it was funny because, you know, it was sort of a curved walkway. And I was just walking back. I was actually taking my parents to the dressing room to show them the dressing room because they were all excited, you know. And I was excited. And it's like, wow, we're backstage at Taylor Swift show. Oh, my gosh, I just opened a freaking Taylor Swift show. Can you believe it? And I almost ran into Faith Hill because they had their backs to us, you know, and there was a crowd of folks and we were trying to dodge in between. And I turn around. I was like, oh, I'm sorry. That was Faith Hill. I didn't mean to bump into you.
That would have been a great conversation starter if you knocked her over.
Oh, probably not. There would probably have been a SWAT team on me within seconds, you know. But anyway. Man, but that was as close as I got to a guest, but I thought it was pretty cool, you know, and we watched all the shows from different places. Like, I think, you know, the first couple shows we watched from the soundboard, and I think that's where we were technically supposed to be during the show. Nobody told us, but it just felt like that was where we were supposed to be. And it was fun for a couple shows, but after a couple shows, we were sort of like, you know, Adam and Rachel and I were thinking, man, we need to go down to the pit and hang out and see, you know. So from then on, we started watching, like, from the pit. And I remember one night we went to one of the boxes, you know, and saw it from a distance. And that was pretty cool because you could seeing it from different perspectives was really interesting, you know. I remember one night I sat on a road case sort of behind, off to the side of the stage, you know, and so you could see more of what was going on behind the scenes. But I still think my favorite was watching from the pit because Paul, the guitar player Paul, is an expert pick thrower. He's like the ninja of pick throwing. And one of Taylor's bodyguards. They're all like, they have some pretty awesome things you don't pick up unless you're in the pit, like interactions with the crowd. But I remember the one of Taylor's bodyguards was standing with his back to the stage and he was just keeping an eye on the pit, you know. And Paul caught my eye and he pointed to the bodyguard and kind of grinned, and next thing I know, this pit comes flying and hits the bodyguard in the back of his head. You know, and then he stops, and he goes back, crosses his arms, watching the pit again, and as soon as he does, like, another pit comes sailing. He does this, like, five times, you know, before he catches on. I thought it was so great. Awesome. And then he did it to me. Then I quit paying attention, and Paul hit me with a pick. It was great.
I think that story just made my day.
Oh man, they got a good sense of humor. All of those guys. Grant, Liz is great, one of the friendliest people. Charity, everyone. Mike, I actually played a show in Nashville recently, and Al and Mike came to the show. I didn't get to see them before they left, but someone told me they were there, and I thought, man, that's really cool. They, you know, because at the time they were still on tour and in between shows. And they probably had 36 hours to be in Nashville, and they actually came out to hear me play. And I thought that was very humbling to me, you know, because those guys are barely home, and that was a really kind thing. There's always shows in Nashville.
You had a chance to sing with Liz, didn't you?
I did, yeah. I actually invited Liz to come sing a couple of the songs I played on the show. And, man, Liz and the band, they were really cool about making a point to come see us, you know, a few times while we played. And supporting us, you know, that's another thing. Obviously Taylor has an extremely busy day any given day on tour, but so does her band. You know, they've got a lot going on, and they really made a point to come see us, and they would say kind things about our performances that let us know that they really were watching and that they really cared about us being out there. I think that says a lot about Taylor's band and crew. Her crew, too. I mean, that's something else. They went above and beyond what they had to do to take care of us, you know, with lights and sound. And, you know, when I said I wanted to try using a wireless pack, they helped me, you know, I'd brought mine, but I had no idea how to work it. And they helped me set it up, and, just really, really great people out there on the road with her.
Well, we're glad you had a fun time. And
do you have any final thoughts? Anything else you want to share that maybe we didn't ask you?
Oh, I want to tell everyone about this.
Let me think if there's anything. Gosh, you know, I think those are all the most interesting stories. I'm glad I remembered the Paul and the pick throwing.
We're glad you remembered that, too.
But no, just thank y'all so much for having me. I'm a fan of y'all doing Taylor Talk, and we'll continue to listen. And, Gensita, it's good to talk to you. having seen you in Omaha, you know, I hope this isn't the last time that we connect like this and catch up.
And, you know, a fun fact we were talking about before the show is, Adam, how many countries have we been downloaded
in? We've been downloaded in 119 countries now, so.
Wow.
So speaking to that note, if you want to just speak about your music for a moment, just tell people where they can download or purchase it.
Oh, sure. I have.
If they're interested at this point.
Yeah, well, my name is Charlie Worsham. It's spelled CharlieWorsham, like AM radio. And I do have an EP that's out on iTunes for like $3.99 or something crazy. And if you type my name in, it's just a picture of me jumping around inside a bouncy castle. And I would love, you know, if anyone's out there and wants to check it out, I'd love for them to check that out. Actually, we talked about maybe giving away an EP of mine, which I'm not sure if we'll do that based on this broadcast or on Twitter after the fact, but,
we can do it right now. We can announce the contest.
Cool. Yeah.
So what we were going to do is we're going to host a contest for all you listeners where you can win a copy of Charlie's EP. It's going to be a pretty simple contest. Basically, all you have to do is tweet why you love Charlie with the hashtag Charlie on Taylor Talk. The only... What am I thinking of? The only...
The catches you have to follow.
Requirements, yes. The only requirements are that you are following both of our Twitter accounts. Ours is at TaylorTalk13. Charlie's is at Charlie Worsham. So follow those two Twitter accounts. Tweet us why you love Charlie with the hashtag Charlie on Taylor Talk. And you will be eligible to win. I believe we decided to run the contest until Taylor's birthday, just because it's a special day. We'll make it a special day for one of you guys. So December 13th is when we are going to pick a winner.
All right, so, that gives us just over 2 weeks.
Any special country you want to give a shout out to?
Oh, there are several that I love very much. I've been to Ireland 3 times, and I plan to retire there if at all possible. It's one of my favorite places on earth. Anyone in Italy? I love Italy. Any troops, if there are any troops out there in Afghanistan or Iraq or anywhere else in the world, I got to go to Iraq once with a band I played in, and it was one of the most humbling experiences of my life, and I have the utmost respect for them. So anyone listening out there on an army base, and Australia. I have some good friends in Australia, too.
Any guesses as to the number one country that we've been downloaded in?
I mean, I would guess that it's the United States, but the fact that you're asking me that question makes me wonder if it's not another.
It is actually Singapore.
Wow.
You know what? United States is number 2.
I really need to make a trip to Singapore.
You should.
Yeah.
We all need to make a trip to Singapore.
They're listening to you right now.
Well, Singapore, I love you. I mean, for crying out loud, you got Sing in the name of your country. How cool is that?
Very good point.
Thank you so much for coming on the show, Charlie. It was such an honor to have you. You're our first guest.
Well, I'm proud to be here. And, Jensita, it is great to talk to you again. And you too, Belle and Adam. Y'all keep... What's that?
Oh, I'm really cute for doing this.
Are you kidding, man? I'm having the time of my life. This is great. And I hope we get to do it again.
All right. Thank you.
Virtual hand hearts.
Yeah, that's... We got to fill you in on that, Charlie. We have an inside joke on the show. It's virtual hand hearts.
Uh-oh, it's happening right now. It's getting recorded.
Virtual hand hearts.
Virtual hand hearts.
With Charlie Worsham.
All right. Thanks again,
Charlie.
Love you, Charlie.
Thanks, y'all. Talk to you guys soon.
We are in no way directly affiliated with Taylor Swift.